Jesus hardly ever takes a vote. Let's talk about it on Key Life.
Hello, this is Mike Keller. Key Life, getting you home with freedom, joy, and faithfulness to Christ. Our Bible teacher is Steve Brown. And here's Steve with the teaching for today.
Thanks, Mike. If you have your Bible, open it there. We're taking a break over Easter week, which is what we're in right now. Where, you didn't know? Where are you living, on Mars or something? At any rate, we're taking a break, and I'm introducing you to some people who were standing on the cross on Golgotha that day. Interesting people. We've looked at Simon, a guy who was a bystander, whistling a Jewish tune, having a good day, thinking about going to the supermarket and getting chewing gum. Then all of a sudden, a soldier grabbed him and said, "Hey, you." And he said, "This is not in the Bible, but I know." He said, "Who, me?" "Yeah, you. Come over here." "Me?" "Yeah, you. Come here." And they put the cross on Simon's shoulders. And we saw, when we looked at that, how it changed his life, how his children became covenant children, what it did to him. Some days, you're just a bystander, and then all of a sudden, everything changes, and you're involved in something big. We noticed the soldiers who smoked stogies and played cards at the foot of the cross. They didn't care. Just another job, another man dying, another grain on the endless beaches of eternity. A lot of people are that way. And then we noticed the robbers. And we saw, as my friend Rusty says, that one is included that you may not despair, and the other is included that you may not presume. One turned to Jesus, as bad as he was, and it was okay. The other cursed Jesus and turned away from him, and it wasn't okay for all of eternity. Now I want you to look at the crowd. Let me say something about them. You'll find that in Matthew 27:39-40. And those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're Son of God, come down from that cross." You know, some crowd can be dangerous. For that reason, one of my life principles is this. If everybody's doing it, it's probably wrong. Let me say that again. Well, you know, it's not absolute, because there are times when I've really done something really stupid just because I have this authority problem. But the point is, if everybody is doing it, it's probably wrong. As individuals, we lack convictions in our culture. As a member of a crowd, something may seem right because, after all, everybody else is doing it. In other words, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. I better not be left out. That should not make any difference, though. Occasionally ask yourself, why? Why am I doing this? I have a friend, Dave Morrison, who was the columnist for the National Gay and Lesbian newsletter. Eutychus was the column, and he was gay, living with another guy, and we ended up writing for a long time, and he wrote a wonderful book, and I can't remember the title of it, but a man who came out of that at great personal cost, one day he just stopped and he said, "What am I doing this for? Why am I doing it?" All of his friends were doing it. They were all involved in the protest, and he said, "Why am I doing this?" Listen, the principle is, if everybody else is doing it, it's probably a wrong. Majorities are dangerous things. There's a thirst for blood in a crowd that doesn't often find its place in an individual. So, be careful with politics. Be careful with religion. Oh, be careful with crucifixions, too. You think about that. Amen. Well, generally at the end of the broadcast on Wednesday, I take some time to answer some questions. And since this is Easter week, I'm going to do what I generally do at Easter week. I'm going to give you a series of 6 questions that provide an answer to the question, how do you know that Jesus isn't providing fertilizer for flowers outside the walls of Jerusalem? I mean, how do you know for sure? Let me tell you something. There's more evidence for the resurrection of Christ than there is for the life of Julius Caesar. I mean, it's incredible. It's as if God said, we walk by faith, not by sight, except in one area. And I'm going to give you some proof that ought to keep you awake at night if you're not a believer and allow you to sleep if you are. So, six questions. Just want to bring them up for your consideration during this Easter week, during this question and answer time. And by the way, my pastor will be in on Friday, and we're going to deal with some questions surrounding the cross. First question, if Jesus is providing fertilizer for flowers, how can you explain the testimony of the disciples? If you lived in the first century and you'd taken the time to look, you would have seen tears in the disciples' eyes at the crucifixion. Everything for which they had worked, prayed, slaved over, had died on that cross. And then 40 days later, these same guys are proclaiming that they've been with Jesus, the man who died on the cross, and there wasn't the one that backed off. How do you explain that? If Jesus is providing fertilizer for flowers, how come their lives were changed? Matthew should have gone back to his tax tables. Peter should have become a fisherman again, sadder but wiser, understanding that every cause comes to an end. The end of a grave, the disciples would have been sad, but certainly wiser. Later on, gathering in the upper room, they were scared. I'd have been scared. They were afraid the same thing was going to happen to them, and they watched it happen to Jesus. However, 40 days later, you hear their joyous laughter throughout the whole land. They said, we've seen a dead man walking, and he said, you could too. Secondly, if Jesus remained dead, how can you explain the faithfulness of the disciples to the testimony of the resurrection, even in the face of their own death? Did you know the original apostles, only one died with his shoes on, and he went to prison for most of his elderly years? John, Bartholomew, was hacked to pieces. James was run through with a sword. Peter was crucified upside down. All they had to say was, look, we made it up. We got it, didn't happen. I mean, I'll tell you something. Would you insist on a lie if you knew that every time you insisted the lie was true, you were driving a nail into your own coffin? Don't be crazy. Of course you wouldn't. I mean, when it really got down where the rubber hit the road, you'd say, listen, I got something to say here. We made it up. It didn't happen. But not one of those men changed their testimony. I'll tell you something, they were sure. They had to be sure because they knew they were going to die for the message that they had delivered. So the first question, if Jesus remained dead, how do you explain the testimony? Secondly, if he's providing fertilizer or flowers, how can you explain the faithfulness of the disciples in the face of their own deaths? Thirdly, if Jesus remained dead, why did 500 people say that they saw him alive? Answer that, if you will. I mean, if one guy comes from the graveyard and says, I saw a guy coming out of the grave, we're going to put him in a funny farm. If 10 come and tell you, we're going to think it's a joke or a conspiracy. But if 500 come, you better go down to the graveyard, you better check it out. And the interesting thing, 1 Corinthians 15:6, most of those 500 were still alive. And how do you explain that 500 people said that they saw a dead man walking? Fourth, if Jesus remained dead, how do you explain the credibility of those witnesses? Answer that, if you will. You know, we are very provincial. We think that we're the only people that ever had any questions. We just thought, well, those poor benighted peasants in the first century, they thought dead people. No, they didn't. They're just like you. They were just as incredulous as anybody else, but they had an advantage you don't have. They could have gone to the witnesses. And if the witness didn't uphold or didn't stand, then the Christian faith would have died in the first century. But you're listening to this broadcast, so it evidently didn't. That means that the witness was true. It held up. Fifth, if Jesus remained dead, how can you explain the inability of the first century skeptics to deal with the resurrection with an alternative explanation? You know, these twits come out with these books every once in a while. They're going to explain away the resurrection. You know, one guy, I can't even remember his name. I knew that name one time. That shows you how important the book was. It came out, he said that Jesus really didn't die on the cross. He swooned. And they thought he was dead, and they cut him down, and they put him in. Cool, man. And then he got up after having nails driven through his hands and feet, after being suffocated all of that time, a crown of thorns, beaten 40 lashes on the back, absolutely crippled and devastated. Then he got up and danced, right? Right. You believe that, you'll believe anything. Or the guys that say, well, the disciples came and they, but of course, they took the course and then made up his story. Come on, man. You've got to be kidding. They could have, it seems to me. And you have to remember that all of the religious and political establishment had vested interest in stopping the Christian faith. It was messing up everything throughout the Roman Empire. They could have stopped it. They had all the resources and the power and the money. They could have gone and found the corpse. Then they would have brought this dead corpse out of Jesus, and they would have said, huh, what does this say to your faith, Turkey, or... and you said he got up and walked on ground. You know, the interesting thing that you need to remember is that nobody provided a corpse. Why do you think that's true? It's because maybe they didn't have one. You ever think of that? You ever think that there was no corpse because that corpse had gotten up out of the grave and was walking around? And then six, if Jesus remained dead, how can you explain the reality of the Christian church and its phenomenal growth in the first three centuries of the Christian era? Constantine came along, and it's a long story. I don't have time to go into it right now. But you remember, he saw a cross, and he won the battle, and became a semi-Christian and changed the empire. Let me tell you something, the Christian faith outlived, outdied, outfought everybody else in the first century. Now, you can't do that unless you've got a big idea. And the Graf-Zellhausen documentary hypothesis is not a big enough idea. I mean, love everybody is not a big enough idea. If you think it is, you believe anything. There's got to be something bigger than that, something like maybe, do you think, a dead man getting up and walking. That's the evidence. And it's true. Hey guys, I gotta get out of here. But first, I must say, Key Life is a listener-supported production of Key Life Networks.